This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's a great honor to welcome to this program Nick Bauman. He is an associate editor with Mother Jones Magazine, works out of the D.C. Bureau, where he covers national politics and civil liberties issues. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the very latest on the situation in Egypt?
Well, the very latest is that President Mubarak there, who's been in power for about 30 years, just gave a speech announcing that he won't run for re-election. Elections aren't really the most serious things in Egypt. He generally gets a very large percentage of the vote. But he won't run for re-election in September. And protesters aren't really satisfied, basically. They aren't satisfied. They want him to leave right away. But he said he's going to use his remaining time in office to ensure a peaceful transition to democracy. So we'll see what happens next. I suspect that the protests won't end until he actually resigns.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to see his reaction. At first was it seemed like to ignore it, and then he's like, well, you don't like me? Okay, I'll give you a different government. Now he's like, well, you want me to go? Then I'll stay till September.
Yeah. It does seem like he takes a little while to get the message, but it's moving in the protesters' direction. It certainly doesn't seem to be moving in the direction of Mubarak.
Yeah, I noticed that I was watching today on Al Jazeera English. The crowds in Cairo and in the other big cities around the country just mind-blowing. I mean, it was unbelievable that the people that were out in the streets from all walks of life, Muslims and Christians, representing the whole spectrum of the population. Help us understand, based on your research and the contacts that you've been talking with on a regular basis now in the country, what is the beef? I mean, what is it, the problem that these people have with this particular leader?
Well, there's sort of general problems, and then there's some specific problems. So the general problems are the same as they are in a lot of countries where people are unhappy, which is they don't have much freedom. There's not much political freedom. It's basically an authoritarian state. People get tortured, all sorts of nasty things. And they're also quite poor, especially by American standards. If people remember the recent revolution in Tunisia, gross domestic product per head there is about 50% higher than it is in Egypt. So Egyptians on average are even poorer than Tunisians. And there's a lot of economic inequality there. The rich have been getting a lot richer in recent years, and the poor haven't been getting any richer. But the real immediate specific problems are that there's been a lot of food price inflation. So food has been getting much more expensive. People have been having trouble actually putting food on the table, and that's going to make anyone unhappy. And oil price inflation as well.
Yeah. We're talking with Nick Bauman of Mother Jones Magazine, and he's an associate editor there because it covers national politics and civil liberties issues. Nick, help us understand the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a political organization in Egypt and throughout the Middle East. There seems to be real concern on both sides of the aisle here in the States that if we have real democracy in Egypt, we could have some type of Islamic, pro-Islamic government in Egypt, and that would go the way of Iran.
Yeah, there is some concern about that. I guess I'd argue against it a little, but not entirely. So, as with everything, this is pretty complicated. The Muslim Brotherhood is sort of a sister organization to Hamas, and a lot of people don't really like Hamas. And its leaders have, over the years, made some really inflammatory anti-Israeli and anti-American statements. And obviously, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who's the second in command of al-Qaeda, used to be a member of the Muslim Brotherhood several decades ago. So that's the bad news. The good news is that the organization as a whole has largely, at least publicly, sort of disavowed violence as a means to political change. They've not really been a driving force behind the protests. they're sort of a small percentage of the protesters. They actually haven't been able to recruit many new members in the younger generations in Egypt. There's actually a large Christian population in Egypt, about 10%, and the people in the big cities are actually pretty secular. So it's a complicated picture. And, you know, most of the people I've spoken to in Egypt think that the Western press is sort of overblowing the concern with the Muslim Brotherhood. Certainly, any government you have, any sort of democratic government you have in Egypt, is going to look more Islamic than the current government. But one thing I'd have people remember is that the government in Turkey the AK party is, if not explicitly, at least implicitly, an Islamic party, and Turkey is a NATO ally of ours, and sort of a country that we see as a model for the Middle East. So it is possible to have sort of Islamic democracies, and that does happen.
I read somewhere, we're talking with Nick Bauman, associate editor at Mother Jones Magazine, and you can check out his blog at the website there for the magazine. Terrific, up-to-date, up-to-the-minute coverage of the events unfolding in real time in Egypt. I read somewhere, Nick, talking about that the folks in Egypt are much more Western than we give them credit for, and the Americans really don't really understand just the average Egyptian.
I would say that people are, you know, it's a more urban society than you might really assume. About a third, I've seen numbers between a fourth and a third of the population is sort of in the greater Cairo, Alexandria metropolitan area. So that's a very urban society, sort of secularized in a lot of ways. And, people always, I think Americans sort of always underestimate the reach of American popular culture and mass media. People all around the world are very plugged into the same sorts of things that we're plugged into. So I would say that's probably right.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about, I was reading recently, Leslie Gelb said that, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And then the plumb line was like, well, the devil you know is still the devil. America has had a long relationship with whether it's installing or propping up dictators that are favorable to American interests, as America has, as I have argued in on this program before, it's moved away from supporting its own principles, and like most empires throughout history, has been more concerned about its own power rather than its own principles that brought it to life. What are your thoughts on this idea vis-a-vis Mubarak? It would seem that America has a great opportunity now, in a sense, our own revolution, that we have an opportunity to stand up and say, you know what, we're not going to support the dictators anymore, beginning with Mubarak, and we're going to do things differently.
Yeah, I guess I like that idea, and it's something that I'd certainly stand up and say, that we shouldn't support dictators. But I understand, that the administration and just being president, you're in a really tough position. You have a lot of different forces pulling on you. I can understand why they might not want to go out and explicitly say that they want him gone. But I also understand the frustration that people in Egypt have that President Obama hasn't come out and said that President Mubarak should step down. I know that there was a New York Times story a couple hours ago saying that the U.S. has privately asked Mubarak to step down. And I know that President or Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey also came out and said that, and that's a NATO ally. So presumably they told the U.S. that they were going to do that. But certainly the Egyptians are, right to be, if I was an Egyptian, I would be upset that the U.S. didn't come out and say that. But
yeah.
I'm not sure I'd be surprised.
Dragging its feet, hedging its bets. John Kerry, the first to come out and explicitly say publicly, I guess, that Mubarak must go. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting and bold of him, but it's certainly a lot. And this shouldn't be taken as a criticism of John Kerry or a criticism of that position, but it's certainly a lot easier to go out and say those things as a member of Congress than as president. You know, you're not the representative of the entire country, or you're a representative of one state or one district. But that's not to say that Obama shouldn't go out and say that. And I think it'd be really inspiring to people if he did. Going out and doing that would be a move with vast consequences for American foreign policy. I mean, remember, our biggest, among our biggest trading partners is a country like China, which is, subject to an authoritarian regime. And it's sort of hard to ask some countries to give up their authoritarian regimes and not ask other countries to do so.
It's 4:45. We're talking with Nick Bauman of Mother Jones Magazine. Check out his blog, up-to-the-minute coverage about the very latest events unfolding in Egypt. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now. Nick, what do you think about Christopher Hitchens had an article recently that it's no surprise that we would finally see these kind of events and protests unfolding throughout the Middle East, when we saw them, in Asia and elsewhere, certainly Iran. Those protests, arguably 2009, 2010, after that election, went nowhere. Hopefully that won't be the case in Egypt. Do you think Jordan now is talking about a new government? Do you think that we're seeing the beginning of some type of mass historic movement throughout the Middle East?
I don't know. I'd like to see any region move towards democracy and increased freedom. Certainly, if you remember the 80s, we spent a lot of time propping up dictatorships and authoritarian regimes in Latin America, and now there are a lot more democracies down there, and the region seems to be more stable. We still have some people we don't like down there, but Chile and Argentina and Brazil are all sort of stable democracies. You can see that sort of change in region wide, and I hope that would be something that would happen. But it certainly, if you look at Saudi Arabia, any sort of revolution or change there would have vast consequences for the world economy. Everyone is dependent on oil, and it would certainly be a big change.
Yeah, they're talking now in Egypt. Before we move on here, we're talking with Nick Bauman. They're talking that Friday now is going to be a big day, and that if Mubarak doesn't step down by Friday, well, what are they saying? Why has Friday become this this key day now?
Well, the thing about Friday is it's a day of worship in the Muslim faith, basically everyone, a lot of people will be going to mosques, and mosques can serve as a rallying point for rallies afterwards. That's what happened last Friday, which was the biggest day of protests up until that point. I think that everyone suspects that this coming Friday will be even bigger if Mubarak hasn't stepped down by then. That would be why.
Yeah. Let's rejoin our conversation with Nick Bauman. He's an associate editor at Mother Jones Magazine. Nick, you wrote recently about the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, and you wrote that federal laws restricting the use of government funds to pay for abortions have typically in the past included exemptions for the pregnancies that resulted from rape or incest. To try to limit that funding, Republicans now are proposing to change the definition of rape and incest. Is that right?
Yeah. For the purposes of these laws, basically what they do is that the original language says that you can have an abortion under Medicaid if you've been raped or you're the victim of incest. And the way they change that is it would now be forcible rape or incest if you're under 18, if you're a minor. So basically that limits the kind of people who could have abortions under Medicaid or other taxpayer funding programs apparently under these rules, forcible rape is now the new standard. It's not just rape.
So a woman who is drugged, for example, a date rape drug or something like that, and who's raped, according to the federal definition, then she wasn't really raped if this legislation is passed.
Right. It's some of the lawyers I spoke to told me, you know, if the definition is just forcible rape or rape with force, there are lots of different kinds of rape that wouldn't be included. Statutory rape, for example, a lot of statutory rapes are quote unquote consensual, even though under law they still count as rape. You could talk about rape by coercion. If you threaten someone, you'll lose your job if you don't sleep with me, or all sorts of date rapes, rapes of women with limited mental capacity, all those sorts of things that don't necessarily involve force. You might run into trouble trying to get Medicaid to pay for your abortion.
And this, of course, is an effort on the part of the members of the new Republican majority in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, that's right. It has about 173 co-sponsors, this bill, I think about 8 or 9 of them are Democrats. It's mostly Republicans, and it has Speaker John Boehner has said this is a top priority of his. It's H.R. 3. Which generally the first couple numbers for bills are reserved for the speaker to assign to bills that he thinks are particularly important.
Now, politically, is this expected to go anywhere, or is this just red meat for the base?
Well, I think it was originally intended as red meat for the base. I'm sort of working on a story right now explaining some of this, but some of the people I talked to in the Senate think that there actually is a chance that it could basically be attached to another bill that would be a must-pass bill, like a bill funding the government or a bill repealing a certain provision of healthcare reform that everyone wants repealed, called the 1099 repeal bill. If it's attached to something like that, then it might actually pass. People might feel that they had to vote for it because they wanted to vote for the bill it was attached to. That could conceivably happen. I suspect that this particular part of the bill is probably too controversial now, but I don't know. It's hard to say. There's another part of the same bill that would, in effect, raise taxes on anyone who chose to have an abortion. If they wanted to deduct that from their medical expenses, they could no longer do that. Or anyone who chose to purchase health insurance on the open market that includes coverage for abortion, you could no longer deduct the cost of that health insurance from your taxes if it included abortion coverage, even if you did not use that abortion coverage insurance.
Even if you never had an abortion, yeah.
Right.
It's amazing, and I'm just sitting here thinking how staggering it is to think that my government is trying to change the definition of incest to only refer to people under 18. So, an 18-year-old girl who's still at home and hasn't gone to college yet or is still living at home who is the victim of incest, well, now the federal government would change that so that that was really no longer incest.
Yeah, that doesn't really count.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
I think it's interesting because for a long time, there was sort of a truce on these issues between the supporters of abortion rights and opponents of abortion rights. They decided, well, we're not going to have federal funds pay for abortions except in these cases, rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And this is a really, whatever anyone, some people will try and tell you that this doesn't really make that much of a difference, but the language has clearly changed. Forcible rape is different from rape. Under 18 is different from all incest. So they're trying to move the boundaries of this debate.
Amazing. Check out Nick's work at motherjones.com. Nick Bauman, associate editor at Mother Jones, and his blog has up-to-the-minute coverage from Egypt. Really one of the best sites if you want to follow and track what's happening there. Nick, look forward to having you on the program again soon. It's been terrific. Thanks for making some time for us.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.